G-I-R-L-S-C-A-M-P, it's Girls Camp.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Girls Camp. It is Haley Rawl, your host. And if you are watching today, either on Spotify or YouTube, I'm on YouTube, by the way. I don't plug that enough, but I am on YouTube. If you're watching, I'm in a new location, which is the house that we are half house sitting, half renting in LA. We are here for the month of February. And if you hear a cat meowing in the background, that would be either Jiminy or Cricket. They are part of the deal for this house sitting thing. And hopefully it's not too distracting. The layout here is kind of hard with the girls sleeping right now. Bentley's on a work call. I've tried to partition the cats as best I can, but you may hear a little background noise of some meowing. So that is that. I'm pretty nervous for today's episode, which is strange because I haven't been nervous to podcast for a really long time since starting this podcast. People will ask me sometimes, like, do you get nervous when you're doing interviews or podcasting? And I honestly don't really anymore, but something about this topic just feels nerve-wracking. I think it's a very personal topic. I think it's very charged, and I have a lot to say about it. And some things that I've been kind of sitting on, thinking about, the topic is, if I have you on the edge of your seats, the topic is parenthood, more specifically motherhood, because that's where I'm coming from as a mom, and how that all plays into the faith deconstruction stuff. I actually did do an episode on this in the early, early days of Girls Camp. I think it was called Post-Mormon Parenthood. I just got interrupted by an earthquake. I'm like 99.9% sure that there was an earthquake just now. So maybe I'll keep some of that footage in. It was nothing crazy, but that is, I think, only the second earthquake I've ever experienced in my life. So welcome to LA. It's been kind of a doozy of a time, which I'll talk about briefly, but we got an earthquake for the beginning of this episode about post-Mormon parenthood. Let me see, where was I? I think I was saying that I did an episode in the early days of the podcast, and I haven't re-listened to it actually. I can imagine I'm going to say a lot of different things now than I did then, because a lot of things have changed for me. Obviously, my girls are older, and I think I've just done more of the parenting thing in a more, I mean, not that I wasn't involved before, but just things have changed, obviously. So we are revisiting the topic. And like I said, I have much to say. I'm going to do my very best to be very unfiltered and speak my truth and just tell you what I've been feeling and thinking around parenthood. Before I jump into it, I want to read this DM I got, because I opened up about this topic just a little bit on Instagram, just did some stories kind of talking about some of my thoughts around parenthood and why I actually kind of try not to talk so much about motherhood stuff. As I said on Instagram, I have found myself really trying to differentiate, maybe that's the wrong word, kind of compartmentalize my motherhood thing and not bring it so much into what I consider this more like professional sphere or space of the podcast. And there are a couple reasons for that. Number one, I want to keep my girls' lives fairly private. I am kind of always thinking about and discovering and rediscovering what that means for me as far as how much I share them and talk about them, but their privacy is important to me. So that's first and foremost. And the second reason is because I just feel like there's a lot out there on the topic of parenthood and motherhood specifically. And I'm not an expert on it. And I just find that sometimes as a parent or as a mom, for me personally, I'm just not that interested, to be completely honest with you, in hearing all that much about parenthood. And in a personal sense, of course I am, like talking to people and swapping ideas and venting to other parents in my life, like that's completely a thing. But I don't feel like when I'm looking for a podcast or a book, I'm like that interested in the parenting thing. And I can get more into that too. But all that to say, I just haven't wanted to make the podcast feel really about motherhood, because I've also sensed that sometimes when women do things, they tend to be about motherhood more, which makes sense and is totally fine. But I think I've tried to just really make a line of like, I'm not just going to be talking about motherhood all the time. So that's why I don't talk about this subject in depth, really. But today, that's the topic of the episode. And I was sharing those things on Instagram and someone sent me a DM that I really, really loved. And I want to read it because it felt really nice for me to hear these words. And I think it sets kind of a nice tone for why I'm talking about this and what I'm trying to do with this topic. None of my friends have kids, so I always appreciate hearing honest conversations about parenthood. I feel like those are typically reserved for the in-group, aka people who already have kids, and it would be really valuable to be able to tune in as an outsider. I'm also really reminded a lot of what you've said about the feminine urge to disclaim and the power that comes from letting go of the overwhelming fear of being misunderstood. I hope that your audience has shown that they can handle your truth, however it may evolve. What a gift of a DM. Thank you for sending me that. You know who you are. I so appreciated so many pieces of that. The beginning part where this person says none of their friends have kids and they don't have kids yet either, I thought that was a really interesting thing to mention because that really resonates with me, that there are specific things I think people talk about amongst other parents that maybe they don't talk about as freely publicly or to people who don't have kids. Like there's almost this game we play where it's like around people who don't have kids, it's like, oh my gosh, it's beautiful and amazing because you don't want to like scare people or because I don't know. It's almost like as a parent, you know how much you love your kids. So maybe you feel more allowed to vent to other parents about your kids. But when people don't have kids yet, maybe you don't feel as secure in the venting or talking as much about the hard stuff. I'm not exactly sure where it came from, but I appreciate her writing me this because I really hope that this feels like a conversation amongst friends. Like I'm talking to my best friend, I'm telling it how it is. And I don't know how much content out there is about motherhood that I have found. I'm sure there's plenty, but I don't know if there's many like podcasts or things I've listened to that feel like it's getting as deep into that nitty gritty, because I think it's just something that people shy away from being really honest about because of how charged it is and because of all of those layers. So I appreciated that part. And I also appreciated the understanding where she said, I'm going to have that feminine urge to disclaim, as I call it, and that the audience, what did she say exactly? And she said, I hope your audience has shown they can handle your truth. And that meant a lot for me to hear in just getting ready to talk about this thing. And I am making this sound like this is going to be the craziest, most groundbreaking thing ever. Like I'm going to spill some intense, crazy tea or something like that. I'm really not. I think many of you listening are going to be like, Haley, what's the big deal? Like why all this drama about just saying that motherhood is hard? But the drama is here because of all these layers I'm talking about. I feel like I'm talking in circles already because sometimes that's what it feels like to be a mom and to talk about being a mom. It feels a lot like talking in circles. Okay, the feminine urge to disclaim. I am going to make a few disclaimers right off the bat, some big, fat, juicy disclaimers, and then get those out of the way so I don't have to spend the rest of the episode disclaiming at the end of every sentence. But of course, I love my kids, and of course, they're wonderful. So here are my three big, fat, juicy disclaimers. Disclaimer number one, first and foremost, I am actually obsessed with my kids. I think they are the fucking cutest, smartest, most amazing humans in the world. I love them. I'm so glad I have them. They teach me amazing things. I've learned so much from them. I've learned so much by being their mom. It has been beautiful and healing and wonderful and amazing. And I did the infertility thing. I worked really hard to get my girls here, as any person who carries a child does. It's hard work to be pregnant, to give birth. It's hard and it's a gift. And it's a gift that not everybody gets to have. And I'm so grateful that I have it. That's my first disclaimer. My second disclaimer is that I have twins. And being a mom of multiples, I've actually found to be really lonely in a way I never would have anticipated. It's been lonely and isolating, and I found myself not being able to relate on certain things to moms who are not moms of multiples or parents of multiples. Bentley has expressed that too. Like, we feel like a lot of times we're trying to like justify our experience as parents, because I think it's quite different having twins. I don't know, because I don't have anything else to compare it to, but I do think that it's different from what I can tell and from talking to other twin moms who've had singletons and twins. And I want to say that up front, because obviously any experience of motherhood and parenthood is going to be incredibly unique. You know, no two situations are alike. There's so many things that play into what that experience is like. For me, having twins is a huge part of it. And as I was thinking about that, I was also thinking about, there are parents who have children with disabilities. How different would that experience be to have a child with disabilities? That would be a much different experience, and one that I can't speak to. And then I was thinking of people who get pregnant accidentally and decide to keep their child, and they have that aspect of, we weren't trying to get pregnant, but we did get pregnant, and now here we are. There's so many things that play into motherhood and parenthood that can really change the game. And I actually had never really internalized that, because I'm only thinking about, oh, I have twins and twins are hard and triplets would be even harder. But there are so many different ways that being a full-time caretaker of children can be hard and can be different. So that's my second disclaimer. My third disclaimer is simply that this is how I feel right now, in this moment, on this day, at this hour, and it changes a lot. And I think that's part of why I hesitate to speak about it sometimes, is because I feel like, oh, but what if I feel different tomorrow? Or what if 3 months from now, it's not feeling as hard and it's just feeling beautiful and fulfilling? And then I'm like, oh shit, 3 months ago, I was just complaining about how hard it was. And now that doesn't reflect my experience. So I'm letting go of that by sharing this last disclaimer, which is, this is just right now. And who's to say how I will feel in the future? Because I've definitely felt different about things in the past. As I was saying, we are in LA right now, and we decided to move out here for the month. It was kind of a, I wouldn't say a spontaneous decision, but Bentley and I have considered potentially moving to California, likely Los Angeles, mostly because his line of work as a commercial cinematographer is here in Los Angeles. Like, that's kind of the mecca for his line of work. So we have considered moving here, kind of just toyed with the idea here and there. We've lived in San Francisco. We loved it there. We love it in Utah. Anyway, we were considering it. Bentley has a friend, two friends actually, that live here where I'm currently sitting, and they were subletting their apartment for February. It was pretty soon after my dad died, and I was kind of in a fuck it mentality, and we decided to rent out this place. You know, I've been really looking forward to it. And then we got here, and I realized how much harder, I guess, it is to be in a new place and to adjust when you have children. And I've also been thinking a lot about travel families and, you know, the bucket list family, families that travel a lot. I genuinely don't know how people do it, because adjusting to living here, even just for the month, I have found so hard and, like, honestly, so scary, which super surprised me, because I think I just got my expectations up and I imagined this thing that it hasn't been, in large part, I think, because of my children, because of the twins, and just realizing how much really comes with being a parent. Not that that's a new realization, but just that it's kind of come to the forefront for me now that we've been here for a week and I haven't had my babysitter. I usually have a babysitter twice a week. I oftentimes have my mom come help, or my mother-in-law, or, you know, I go to the museum with my mom friends. Like, I'm just kind of in a groove and a routine, and not that it isn't still hard and the things I'm saying don't apply then, but it's just kind of brought it out more. It's magnified it more being here in LA. I gave all those disclaimers before, and something I've been noticing people do around me lately, I actually noticed Jenna Rammel do this in last week's episode, is I've been noticing people replacing a but with an and. So instead of, I love my kids, but saying, I love my kids and. And I really like that reframing. I think in so many aspects of life, that's really helpful. I often think in but terms instead of and terms. And I really like the freedom of using an and, because an and does not negate everything that comes before it. So I feel like the rest of what I'm going to talk about my struggle essentially with being a mom is an and. All those things are true. I could probably spend a whole episode talking about how obsessed I am with my children, how grateful I am, how much it's changed me, and how much it's just been a beautiful, amazing thing. And I'm going to talk about the and part, because that's the part that I think, as I've said, is a little bit harder to come by. The first thing I want to get into with parenthood and motherhood is that Bentley and I have had such an incredibly difficult time balancing our time and our efforts with childcare. Especially since I started the podcast, it has been really difficult on our marriage to figure out what feels fair and what feels not even just fair, but what feels good for both of us and for our girls. Because I'm now doing this podcast, I have this profession, this career, and it's kind of like a startup is how I talk about it. It's something that's not making a ton of money yet, hardly any money yet, but it's something that I know has tons of potential that I feel like I'm putting a lot of work and energy into, because I believe, and Bentley believes, that it ultimately will be a sustainable career. Bentley, his line of work as a cinematographer is kind of unpredictable. It's been kind of a roller coaster in a lot of ways, because he has worked in-house where he has a consistent salary, and then he's gone freelance where he doesn't have the same consistency, but he has a higher ceiling on how much money he can make. I just say that to say contextually that we both feel like we're in a place where we're kind of chasing dreams and working towards something that we know has potential. And Bentley does amazing. He already has a thriving, successful career, but he's also kind of in grind mode, trying to level up, get to his next steps. And I am too with the podcast. And then there's the parenting thing. And whether or not you are both working, if both partners taking care of parents are working, or if you're a single parent or something, it just feels like there's this constant negotiation that can be so, so taxing all the time to figure out, okay, if I need to do something for the podcast, we either need to A, find childcare, or B, Bentley needs to watch the girls. If Bentley needs to do something, then I need to watch the girls, or we need to find childcare. And resources are not unlimited when it comes to childcare. And because Bentley is the primary breadwinner, even though I contribute financially as well, we often find ourselves defaulting to, I'm the primary caretaker, not even defaulting to that, but we've kind of discussed that. So I'll be the primary caretaker. And then when I need something for the podcast, that's kind of when we have to negotiate and figure out, can Bentley do it? What's Bentley doing? And it just has brought up a lot of tension and a lot of difficulty for us. And it's also brought up for me so many layers of guilt and of shame. I know myself, I know that I want to pursue something outside of the home. I used to have a day job. I got let go fairly recently in November. My day job kind of helped me, because I felt like my day job was funding this passion of the podcast. And now that I don't have my day job because I got laid off, it feels like there's more pressure now internally from myself on the podcast, but also maybe a little more pressure in my family situation with Bentley, because it feels like, okay, now when I'm taking time for the podcast, that is not necessarily being financially compensated. I'm getting so into the weeds of this, but I just feel like there's got to be people out there who relate to that feeling. And even if people aren't working, so if you're like a full-time stay-at-home parent, there's still always a negotiation that has to take place when there's kids involved. The partner who works gets home from work, they're tired because they've been working, they've been making money and the partner's been home all day, also working, taking care of the children, doing what I think is an incredibly difficult, taxing job. What if you both need a break? Who gets to take the break? Who makes the dinner? Who cleans up the dinner? Who puts the kids down for bed? Is it the partner who's been at work all day? Is it the partner who's been with the kids all day? Are you going to switch? It's just like so much goes into figuring out how you're going to do it in a way that I couldn't have possibly comprehended before doing it or even before starting this podcast that has taken a lot of my time and energy. And then I can't help but feel as a woman that there is so much more guilt and shame that I put on myself when I am the one who is needing some more leeway to like get something done. Or if I'm the one caretaking the girls that day because Bentley's doing work stuff and I need to get something done, then I might show the girls some extra TV that day. And then I feel shitty because I wasn't present because I was trying to get something done. So should I not get that thing done? And it could potentially affect the business thing I'm working on. Would Bentley have to make that same decision between his work and caretaking? But at the same time, Bentley is the primary breadwinner, as I said before. Like, I could just go in circles forever and ever about how much there is there and how much time I spend in my brain, quite frankly, feeling inadequate as a mom because I want to contribute outside of the home. I don't think that's unique to working outside of the home because I've talked to so many women who are stay-at-home moms and they still feel like there's this really hard negotiation of, well, what if I want to start a book club? What if I want to do a cookbook club? What if I want to pick up a hobby because I'm going crazy all day with the kids? How do you justify using resources for childcare or asking a little more from your partner? It just feels really difficult. And it's really interesting being here in California as well. Been here for a short time, but just kind of looking around and realizing yet again how Mormon so many of the things are in my brain and in my heart. Like last week, Jenna and I called it cellular level, the feeling of like self-worth from Mormonism. But I feel like there's so many cellular level things about womanhood and motherhood that come from Mormonism that I'm still actively uncovering and working through. For example, Bentley and I had a friend over the other night and we were just talking about some of this stuff, just how it's been kind of difficult for us to parse out career stuff and parenthood stuff. And this friend is from Utah, but he's lived here in California for a while. And we were just kind of realizing with him as like the third party, how much the traditional roles, gender roles are all around us in Utah, even around post-Mormon people. And not that those traditional gender roles or the traditional gender split of a woman taking care of the kids at home and a man going to work and being, you know, the quote breadwinner are bad, but just that that feels so normal still to us. And then you leave Utah for even a little bit, you know, when you go to the park and I'm looking around and I'm like, oh, it seems like so many of these children here at the park are with nannies. And thinking about, I wonder what those parents are doing. I wonder if both of those parents are at work. I wonder if one of them's at work and one of them's getting errands done or taking care of the house while they have the nanny. And just realizing that this Mormon, maybe even Utah way of doing things is not the norm everywhere. But because it's so the norm, not only where we currently live in Utah, but also on that cellular level for both Bentley and I, how difficult it can feel to push against that norm. There's all those kind of logistical aspects of it. There's also this aspect of it that feels so confusing because it's really hard to feel aligned and intuitive as a mother when I feel like I'm constantly fighting conditioning because I feel like I'm either falling into a gender role or falling into a mom guilt that was conditioned and programmed, and I don't want to do that, Or I also sense in myself that sometimes I'm completely overcorrecting and I'm pushing so hard, for example, like pushing to have my time to work on the podcast. And if I really take a step back, I think about, actually, I really want to be spending more time with my kids. I want not more time, but the time I do spend with them, I value. I don't want extra childcare because I want to be with them. And is that what's best for them? Or could they benefit from more childcare from someone who's being paid to enrich their lives? Like those layers where it feels really personal have been really hard for me. And I find myself kind of constantly flip-flopping almost, where I'll find myself in a zone where I feel so content being a primary stay-at-home mom. I feel like I can have a side hustle and I can make it work in the time between naps and when the girls go down to sleep. And that feels okay for me. And I feel fulfilled by being a stay-at-home parent mostly. And then there are times where I resent so deeply being the default stay-at-home parent because I feel like my potential outside of the home is being so limited. And I feel like I'm the default parent sheerly because I'm a female, I'm a woman, and because we've grown up our whole lives learning that that's what women should do. And I don't really have any answers. I haven't really landed anywhere that I feel perfectly comfortable with. I think it is a constant negotiation. And I think because children change so quickly, it will change a lot. And that's okay, but it's also hard in a marriage to continually have to be checking in and continually have to be like, how are you feeling about your childcare efforts versus your career efforts? And how are you feeling about mine? And how can we adjust and make sure we each get what we need? And yeah, it's really hard. When I talk about motherhood being hard, I think there's absolutely the general narrative of motherhood is, of course it's hard. The days are long, the years are short. It's hard, but it's hard in this like cute way, you know? Like, oh yeah, it's hard. You got to clean up the messes and oh, those, you know, the emotions are big and it's hard, but oh, isn't it wonderful? It feels like the hard thing is like cute almost. I can't think of a better way of describing it. But I think what I sometimes don't hear people really level about is that motherhood is hard in this way that it can even be traumatizing. I have found myself, I don't want to use that word too lightly, but I think it's fair to use here. I have been traumatized by some parts of being a mom, like legitimately traumatized. And I was trying to explain this to Bentley yesterday because now that we're in a new place, when Bentley is wanting to get some work done, I've tried to venture out by myself with the girls. So we went to the park and I said, going to the park alone with the girls is not hard for me because it's like monotonous or because I'd rather go do something for myself, even though those things can absolutely be true and those things are hard. But it's hard for me because I actually feel scared. It actually feels scary for me to go to the park with two toddlers and not know what if they both have a meltdown at the same time and I can't wrangle them into their strollers and people are watching me and people offer to help and that just makes them more upset. What if one of them sprints in one direction to the road and the other one sprints in another direction and I literally can't get both of them at the same time? Like I actually feel sometimes that going out in public with them feels legitimately scary to me. And that was something that felt really good to crystallize in my mind and be able to articulate to Bentley, because that is kind of the difference, I think, one of the differences between, oh, it's hard, it's tiring, it's overwhelming versus no, like it can feel scary. And I think there's a lot of that too in pregnancy, for example. Pregnancy didn't feel just hard for me because I was sick and uncomfortable. That was hard. That sucked. That's so valid that that's a hard thing. But the hardest part of pregnancy was that mentally I was carrying two babies that I had worked really hard to get pregnant with. And I felt like if anything went wrong in my pregnancy, that it was my fault. Like, I felt such a burden of carrying those girls. And as much as it was a burden, it was also a gift, but it was a burden. And it was an immensely, immensely challenging thing to feel like I am carrying this life inside of me and I'm responsible for it. And if I don't do the kick counts today and I just, you know, am not in tune enough with my body and something happens to the baby inside of me, then it's my fault. Like, that's scary. That's not just hard. That's scary. And it goes many levels deeper than having to endure hardship of being sick, for example. I think I'll talk a lot more about a lot of this soon because I'm interviewing a guest that I'm so excited about, and we're going to be talking about infertility because we've both gone through infertility. And I think a lot of this might also kind of relate back to the infertility thing. So I don't want to dig too deep into infertility, but I just want to say for right now that starting out my journey trying to become a mom, feeling so inadequate about being a mom, feeling like so many people around me just like had sex and got pregnant, and I couldn't do that. And I tried and tried and tried, and then I did medical interventions and still couldn't get pregnant. And then I had to get to this highest level of medical intervention before I got pregnant. It already made me feel, I think, broken, especially with the Mormon messaging of women, ultimately, as I interpreted it, are meant to be biological mothers. They're meant to get pregnant, carry children, birth them, and care for them. And that is their greatest joy. That is their greatest gift to the world. That is what they are meant and born and divinely ordained to do. And from the jump, I couldn't fucking get pregnant. So I was already inadequate to even just be able to get pregnant. And I think that's kind of a theme for me with motherhood, is that although I have deep in my core a sense and a knowing that I am the right person to be raising my own children and that I know what's best for them ultimately, there are lots and lots of layers of feeling like I was never that girl that was just like dying to have babies. I was always kind of uncomfortable around babies, to be honest. I didn't really like babies until my sister had my niece. Hunter, my niece, was like the first baby that I was like, oh, babies. Like, I want a baby. And now that I've had my babies, I feel very differently. But that piece of me always felt wrong or broken because not only was I surrounded by a lot of women who seemed to be so much more natural as caretakers, but because of so much messaging growing up as a Mormon woman, that this was my ultimate end-all be-all, and not feeling so intuitively drawn to motherhood felt really confusing for me. One of the lessons I've learned being a mom is that the motherhood as taught by Mormonism, and what I'm saying by that motherhood thing is caring, patient, nurturing, kind, even some of the more logistical things of homemaking, you know, baking, cooking, cleaning. That's kind of what I've always imagined was like motherhood with a capital M. Like, that is the thing to be. And what I've learned actually being a mom is all of those things can be wonderful and important and gifts to your children, but there's so much more to being a mom than those things. I think what I mean by that is there's so many traits that I have that I don't feel like line up perfectly with the characteristics of quote mother, but they make me a damn good mom. And I guess I just have realized, just because I don't necessarily consider myself maternal in the traditional sense, doesn't mean that I'm not maternal. And maybe in some of these ways, I feel like I fall short on that list of motherhood. I make up for it in these other ways, right? Because it's just essentially what I'm saying, I think, is that there's no right way to be a mom, or there's no list of characteristics that make a good mom. I think just being a good mom is being dedicated not only to your children, but also dedicated to yourself and determined to do right by your family, yourself included. That might be my current working definition of what it means to be a good mom. And I'm sure as many moms as are out there have a different definition and kind of like guiding star and guiding light. But I don't think for any of us, the epitome of being a good mom is like having the hot bread fresh out of the oven. Maybe. I mean, truly maybe. And not even in a derogatory way. Like, I think that's beautiful and wonderful too. But I'm just saying that motherhood is not, it doesn't fit in this box that I think Mormonism taught me it did. And so much of my journey as a mom has been really learning to be okay with that and saying, I'm proud that I'm the mom that I am, even if it's different from the mom that I was told I should be. On that note, I want to read something that I actually saw like a couple hours ago, and it struck me so deeply. I was like, oh my gosh, yes, this is something I've been trying to articulate as I've thought about the motherhood deconstructing Mormonism thing and haven't been able to put my finger on. And it's a Ruth Bader Ginsburg quote. Rosie Card, at Rosie Card on Instagram, shout out Rosie, she shared this on her story and I just love it so much. It was actually someone DM'd her and shared this quote, but Rosie put it on her story. And the quote is, "The pedestal upon which women have been placed has all too often, upon closer inspection, been revealed as a cage." If that does not sum up my experience of benevolent sexism and attempting to deconstruct the confines of that benevolent sexism, I don't know what else does. Growing up Mormon, you are told you are so important and so valuable because you are caring and nurturing and because you have the ability to carry life. And that seems like the greatest pedestal anyone could be put upon, right? And those things are, to be fair, wonderful, glorious, majestic, like all the things. But that pedestal, for me, has many times felt like a cage. And not even now from the Mormon church, because I'm out of the Mormon church, but in my own mind, of feeling like, wait, if I've always been told that the best thing to be as a woman is XYZ, then I have to be those things. And yeah, that conditioning runs really deep. And I think Ruth Bader Ginsburg, shout out RBG, said it so beautifully. Actually, remember one thing that I read, this is also from Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I swear this was on like a coffee table book or something. I can't even remember where I was, but I just like kind of stumbled upon it. And this was while I was kind of early days of trying to get pregnant, if I remember right. And Ruth was talking about, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, we're on first name basis apparently, I'll call her Ruth. She was talking about how I believe she was going to law school when she already had her first daughter. And she said something along the lines of, going to law school gave me a respite from motherhood, and being a mom gave me respite from law school. But not even that those things were just rest from one another, but that those things both helped her be better at the other thing. Going to law school helped her be a better mom, and being a mom helped her be a better law student. And I'm so obsessed with that concept. I think that's maybe another part of my working definition of what it means to be a good mom, is feeling like I'm not going out and pursuing a career or doing this podcast necessarily selfishly. And I don't even like that word, because if I just wanted to do it for myself, great. But I do genuinely, deep in my heart, feel that me doing this thing that fills me so much, that I feel so passionate about and see so much potential in, that will not only serve me, but it will also ultimately make me a better mom, therefore serve my children. And it's so interesting too, because I was talking to a close friend about this, and she's just a fantastic mom. I admire her in so many ways, and as a mother especially. And she was talking about her upbringing, and she has some kind of issues or you know, things with her upbringing where she went to daycare really early on. She had working parents, and she was saying that that was hard for her. She remembers that being hard for her. She wishes that her mom was around more. And so that's kind of informed how she feels as a mom. And it was interesting hearing that from her because I realized I think I had almost the exact opposite experience where I so badly wish that my mom could have had more for herself outside of motherhood. But because of the circumstances with my parents getting divorced and with money being kind of an issue, there wasn't a lot of resources. I feel like she had to give and give and give and sacrifice and sacrifice. And my mom has never done that in any way, but with the utmost grace and generosity. Like, I've never felt resented or anything, which I know a lot of people do. I've talked to a lot of friends who grow up and feel this resentment almost from their parents of like, I gave everything to raise you and now you're not exactly who I wanted you to be and you owe me that or I'm entitled to that. And I think that can happen a lot with a certain type of parenthood. I have not felt that with my mom, but I think my philosophy on parenthood is in a lot of way informed by feeling like I wish my mom could have had more for herself than I feel like she was allowed to have due to a lot of circumstances. And so it's also interesting to think how our upbringing plays into how we feel as parents. I just think that was a light bulb moment for me in a lot of ways to realize too, like, I'm not doing it wrong. My friend's not doing it wrong. There is no right or wrong anyway, but how much how we feel as parents is affected by what we saw and what we felt as kids and if it felt good or not and in what ways it felt good. And it's funny I say that because in that one way, I feel like pretty determined to like carve out my own space, even as a mom, because of what I just said about my mom, but also so much of how I mother is exactly like my mom because I'm obsessed with my mom and because she mothered me, in my opinion, so beautifully and so well. And so there's also so many ways that I'm just like, if only I could be exactly like my mom, then I'd be the best mom ever, you know? I always feel kind of unsatisfied when I do episodes where I don't feel like I'm very conclusive about things. I'm just kind of like throwing things out there and hoping that you know, people out there relate or feel like this is useful in any way. I think the last thing I want to speak to is the element of being a parent as a post-Mormon, where you kind of have to sit with the fact that in another life without Mormonism, you may not have either A, had kids at all, or B, you very likely would not have had kids at the same time or made the same decisions about those kids maybe early on if you weren't Mormon. AKA, if I wasn't Mormon, I would be living a very different life, I bet. And I think a big part of that life that I would be living would be that I would very likely be childless at this point, I think. And who's to say? And I don't even think it's necessarily fruitful to be like, well, if things were different, then things would be different. Like, no shit. But when it comes to children, which are such a massive, massive decision, I know so many Mormon women who end up leaving the faith really struggle with the fact that they had kids, in their opinion, way sooner than they would have otherwise. And having children younger and without the same resources can be incredibly difficult, I think, to the point of even being traumatizing. And I mean that word when I say it. And I know that there are so many parents who love their kids with all their hearts and would never in a trillion years want to not have those kids that they have, but still feel like, man, we were not ready. We didn't fully understand. And we did this because of our conditioning and because it was what everyone around us was doing. It feels difficult for me to say that there's a piece of that that I feel because it almost feels embarrassing because of my infertility journey. Like, okay, come on, you had literally 3 years to decide and decide again and pay a shit ton of money to have kids. How could you have not, you know, how could you blame conditioning or programming? And I'm not even blaming it. But I do think as my children have gotten older, more and more that's come up for me of just realizing, oh, like, I don't think I really actually thought this through, which is crazy. I get that it's crazy, but I feel okay saying it because I think there's a lot of people who can relate. And there's actually nothing I love more than when I get a DM from someone when I talk about the parenthood thing who says, I don't know for sure if I want kids and I'm thinking about it. Because I never thought about if I wanted kids or not. I didn't. I just like, you have kids. That's what you do. You just have kids. I didn't think about like, do I actually want kids? That didn't feel like an option. I also have a friend who I'm hoping to interview and she is childless by choice. So she's decided not to have children at all. And I think she will be able to speak to that so beautifully, like that experience and everything that comes with it. But it's weird to have kids and realize I never really considered if I actually wanted kids or not. And I think really in my heart, I know, I don't know for sure because, you know, I grew up the way I did. Like I have that programming, but I'm glad I have kids. I think for my life journey, it is something that I really did want. But I don't think I had sat enough with the reality of it. But at the same time, how can you? You know, like you don't know what you don't know. I also think though, like again, being outside of Utah, a lot of people who have kids outside of those structures of either high demand religion, or I know there's other pockets in the world and in the US where people have kids very young. But I think outside of that, people have kids at a very different time of life because it seems like they have more of an understanding. Whereas in the Utah Mormon world, it's kind of just like you make it work. Like I got pregnant when I was 26. Bentley and I were both out of school. We were dual income. We were way, way ahead. We were just in a way different situation than, you know, I went to BYU. People were having kids while both partners were in school. So they weren't making money. They were in school and they were having like two kids. I don't know how those people did it. I don't know if they're okay. I hope that they are. I don't know if they're okay like in the head. I mean, like, I don't know how they survived it because I'm barely surviving it in my current circumstances. And Bentley and I are dual income to an extent and we are a little bit older. And even still, it just feels so hard. And then when I'm out here in California comparing myself to families out here, I'm like, oh, that is very different to have been dual income for a really long time, to have a longer maternity leave, et cetera, et cetera. And there's just so many levels that I didn't really think it through entirely. And I don't fault myself for that, nor do I think any parent out there would say like, oh, we knew 100% what we were getting into. Like I said, I don't think you can like get it until you get it. But I do think that it's worth mentioning and it's something that I've thought a lot about. The funny thing is with kids though, and Bentley and I joke about this with marriage where we're like, if we understood marriage, like if we were not 20 and we were even 25 or 28, it would have been so much a harder decision to get married. But instead, we just got married and then we had to figure it out, or we wanted to figure it out. And kids a little bit feels the same way for me, where I'm like, part of me is like, you know what? I didn't know and I did it. And I'm so grateful I could get pregnant and that I have my girls. And now I'm just like on the train and I'm figuring it out and it's okay. And we have support and we can do it. So there is a little bit of an element of that, of almost being like saved from how difficult of a decision that would be if I was like more mature and more thoughtful about it, if that makes any sense. But that said, I do think that, you know, my girls one day when they're older, if they want to get married or want to have kids, I just can't even fathom how different their conditioning will be and how happy I am for them that they will know that there are so many possibilities and options on the table for them in a way that I just like never could have comprehended really because of so many circumstances. And anytime I talk about this too, I also think of like, okay, what about those people who, you know, I mentioned this at the beginning of the episode, but they accidentally get pregnant and they decide to keep their child. And then they spend the rest of their life with their complete life path altered so significantly for something that they weren't necessarily choosing. Like, that would be so hard. And I have so much compassion for that. And there's just so many ways that it can look that I think back to the very beginning, like, of course, no one ever wants to like say they would wish their kids away, because I genuinely don't think anybody feels that way. But there's an and. I said but. But there is an and, which is you can love your children wholeheartedly and also mourn and miss and wonder about a life where you didn't have them. And that's a difficult thing to hold space for both of those things. But I do think that for many people, many, many people who've deconstructed religion, that is something that is real. Whew. Thanks for listening to me ramble and analyze and overanalyze as I often do. It's been really beneficial. I say this a lot, but it has been really beneficial for me to really sit with some of this and think through all these things that affect who I am as a parent and how I feel about being a parent. And, you know, there are no easy answers. There's no magic formula, but I do think that there's a lot of peace and a lot of just solidarity in knowing that you're not alone in it. And I asked for you all to write in anything you wanted to share or topics you wanted me to touch on. And I think so many of us feel really similarly about this whole thing, which is that it's beautiful in a way that you would never give up, but that it's really complicated too, and that it can feel hard and scary and isolating and all of those things. The one last thing I wanted to share is that I was talking with somebody in my life and they're lovely and amazing, but I was kind of sharing kind of a shallow level, but they asked how I was. And I said, you know, Bentley and I are, we're struggling right now. We're struggling to figure out how to manage both of our careers and the children. And this person, they said to me, well, I just don't think you both can be doing that at once. Like, I think you kind of have to pick who's doing it while the kids are young. And that really affected me. And I was like, is she right? Am I so selfish to be asking for this time and this attention and this energy when I should just be savoring every single second of my amazing twins' toddlerhood? And I sat with it. And I think that the fact that it hit me that way, maybe there is a little bit of truth to that. You know, maybe there is a little bit of prioritization that needs to be done. But I really, truly think that that's not the case, at least for me, at least for Bentley and I. And I think the reason that that can be a harmful narrative is because who's it going to be? It's probably going to be the man if you're in a heterosexual relationship. It's probably going to be the man. And that just makes me really sad because I know that there's so many women who are really craving to contribute outside of the home. And if the narrative is, well, if you both contribute outside of the home, someone's going to suffer, then the women are the ones who are going to be, you know, staying home and sacrificing those other things. And again, if that feels right for your family, for you as a woman, there maybe is an element of truth to that. I think there is some truth to it in the sense that something's got to give, right? I did a TikTok about the whole Ballerina Farm. If you don't know her, she's an influencer. She had her 8th child and then went to the Mrs. World pageant like 10 days later or something. And she's Mormon. And what I was saying that I think is so harmful about what that whole narrative kind of portrays is it portrays that you can be the perfect wife, mother, homesteader, and you can have this thing outside of the home. And I don't think that's true. I don't think you can be everything at home and everything outside of the home. I think there's something that has to give. It might have to be more flexibility and leeway on your partner's behalf. It might have to be budgeting really strictly so that you can manage some childcare. It might be a whole host of things. But what kind of rubbed me wrong about the Ballerina Farm thing is that I think she was representing this, you can have it all, which this is sounding contradictory because, you know, when that one friend of mine said, well, you both can't pursue something, I'm like, well, fuck yes, we can, and we're going to. But what I mean is that you can't do it all. You can't be perfectly perfect presence all the time in the home and do something else. You're going to have to find ways to negotiate, and you're going to have to find ways to make it work. In my opinion, as I said before, I would rather feel like my girls can grow up seeing me as a well-rounded, whole, sane, happy person. And for me, I know that that means giving myself the permission to pursue things outside the home to some extent. To what extent is, I think, where it gets complicated. And I think it gets complicated because some people that seem to have it all are actually just really incredibly well-resourced. So they have enough support to have it all. And I have a lot of support too. I could not be doing this podcast if I didn't have childcare that we pay for and also childcare that we don't pay for, because my mom and my mother-in-law are very involved. That's a massive privilege to even be able to do what I do. So I know sometimes it's not even a choice. Sometimes the choice isn't there depending on the circumstances too. And I just want everyone to feel seen. And I know that this won't resonate with everybody, as I said, because everybody's experience is different. But I wanted to share where I'm at, how it relates to the Mormonism, and, you know, just spill my guts, try and figure some things out along the way. And if you're out there listening and you're figuring out if you want to be a parent, if you are struggling as a parent, I see you. I'm right there with you in the trenches of it. And I think that there's a lot going on in our society too that's moving things forward and changing some of these narratives. And I just hope that for our children and for our daughters, that there might be less layers of destigmatizing and of guilt and shame, and just more options on the table that feel like they really have options. That's what I hope for them. And I think that the world is changing that way, and I hope to be a part of it. So there's my mini Barbie movie monologue. Sometimes talking about this stuff just sounds cheesy and corny, but it is what it is. Thank you for hearing me out. A little foreshadowing, I am so excited for what this month has to offer for Girls Camp. I am about to celebrate a very exciting milestone for the podcast. I have a number of interviews lined up that I have been so excited for with people who live here, and I just can't wait. I love doing this so much, and I'm really grateful that I'm able to do this while also being a mom. So thanks for supporting me. Thanks for supporting Girls Camp. If you want to support even more, please leave a rating and a review. It helps a ton. If you want to donate, I have my Venmo in my Instagram. I hate saying that. I don't know why it makes me shy, but it is there. And truly, that money just goes back into the podcast so I can do this. And a lot of what it goes to is childcare. Speaking of. So thanks for being here. Thank you for supporting me. And I can't wait to chat with you next week. Until then, have a good one. Bye. G-I-R-L.